Please silence all electronic devices.
Representatives Brawley, Sain, Hastings, Martin, Setzer, and Soka are recognized.
So the bottom line is, folks, there are a lot of bad people out there.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
You're fired!
You know, the guy that used to sit in this chair had a saying, if you think everybody's good, you ain't met everybody.
Any further discussion or debate?
It's Monday, September 26th, 2016, from the American Tobacco Historic District in downtown Durham. I'm Jeff Tiberi. On this episode of the podcast, we'll take a look at the week ahead, the unrest in Charlotte, reporting overseas, a melancholy goodbye, perhaps whatever else we stumble into, and joining me today, a couple of local hacks. Excited to have both of them here. 14 years covering the General Assembly from the Kent State University, Patrick Gannon. Pat, how are you?
I'm great, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And we also have a native of Medfield, Massachusetts, I believe, former Fulbright scholar, part-time stand-up comedian, Dan Boylan. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Jeff. Pleasure to be here with such an introduction as well. And a great program that you've got running as well.
Hacks was a good description.
All right.
Sure.
As long as you're okay with that. Cut me off if anything is unfair. We'll start with the goodbye, because I think that'll probably set up the conversation a little bit today, because, Dan, it'll be largely you and I talking about some of the current events. And, Pat, you will step away from that conversation as you prepare to say goodbye this week. You're leaving for the State Board of Elections. Fill us in on any details that you care to share.
That's correct. My whole life I've been in journalism, or my whole adult career, about 17 years. Most of that has been in North Carolina, and the last 5 or 6 years have been solely devoted to covering the General Assembly and state government in Raleigh. So it's kind of a bittersweet move. I'm going to be the spokesman at the State Board of Elections starting next Wednesday. So my last day at the Insider will be Friday. It's been quite a ride. Started back in 1999 when the newsroom that I work for in upstate New York had one computer terminal with the internet that we all shared, and three cell phones that we would grab. We would sign out when we went out on assignment. So it's changed a lot.
What newspaper?
In New York,
yeah.
It was the Utica Observer Dispatch.
Okay, nice. I went to Syracuse.
Nice.
So I remember
about a half hour, 45 minutes
there
from Syracuse.
Yeah. So you're departing. Bittersweet melancholy. What will you miss most about being part of the Capitol Press Corps? I'll let you sit on that for a second. We'll miss Pat. It's a neat environment. As a reporter, it's not something that I really experience anywhere else in the state on a regular basis until I was there. Pretty collegial. Everybody, I think, seems to get along. It's a place for me as a younger journalist to work with reporters who have had all kinds of experiences and a lot more than I have. So we will miss having you there. What will you miss about the dust-covered, moldy carpet of the press corps, if anything, in particular?
Probably not much about Dan and I's little cave that we have kind of adjacent to the press room. It's kind of cinder block walls surrounding us in this tiny little room. Dan could probably go into more detail about that. He calls it the cave.
Yeah, we sometimes joke and say men either go mad in a cave or they find deep inspiration.
For
listeners, our office is literally right inside the General Assembly.
Right.
The press corps there sometimes swells during sessions towards the end of the session. Mm-hmm. It swells to two dozen folks. But for the most part, for instance, right now, while we're not in session, it's a thin crew.
Right, pretty quiet.
Right.
You guys and the Associated Press reporter Gary Robertson, I think, are about the only people that are there regularly. Is that accurate? I am not there regularly out of session. Admittedly.
Right.
That's pretty accurate, although people do come in. You know, I see Bo Minnick and Laura Leslie and Mark Binker and people like that down there a lot. Right. But that's what I'll miss most, I think, are the people. Not only the fellow reporters down there and the ones for the News and Observer who owns the Insider that we work for, but also the legislators, just being around and seeing all the same faces, and the lobbyists as well. I'll miss that kind of daily interaction. And I'll miss just kind of being on top of all of the news that happens on a daily basis. I assume I'll still get some of that, but it won't be I won't be one of the first people to know about things as they happen, at least not as easily.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about The Insider, because I think for many of our listeners, they might not be all that familiar with it. We're talking some of the familiar names of folks who cover state politics. Laura Leslie obviously worked here for a number of years, and Bo Minnick is a TV reporter. What you guys do, again, as a younger reporter, as somebody that stepped into covering politics a year and a half ago, it's been invaluable and very helpful to me. The Insider is, I mean, it's original reporting. It's also a roundup each morning of what's going on. That's kind of the oversimplified version of it. But talk to me a little bit about what The Insider is.
I guess I'll take that one.
You should, because you're leaving soon. So take it away, man.
So The Insider, State Government News Service, is a email that goes out just after midnight, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. And occasionally we'll have special insiders. And what we do is we round up all of the state government, state politics related news from across the state, whether it comes from Asheville or Wilmington or Raleigh or Charlotte or any of the small towns that dot the state. And we round it all up and we trim it down, edit it down into kind of bite-sized portions, and we send it to most of our subscribers are lobbyists, business executives, legislators, and people that follow government very closely. So we send it out to them for it's a separate subscription. We also have, aside from that, a tracking service which lobbyists purchase that allows them to track individual bills as they move through the General Assembly on a real-time basis. And that's very valuable service to a lot of the lobbyists in the lobbyist community at the General Assembly.
Right. And I think from a perspective standpoint, it's called The Insider, so we don't have as many nut graphs that explain things,
right?
Because you take it for granted that a lot of our audience are political insiders, political professionals.
Sure.
A lot of our material then also runs in the News and Observer, the Charlotte Observer. I think because of our position in there and being in there all the time, like we've discussed, it allows us to get a little bit closer to both parties.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really great, because you can break things on both parties. And in this state at this point, you know, journalists are considered to be, by some legislators, this drive-by media. We've been characterized as a left-wing.
Right,
we're not. Characterized as these left-wing sort of demons with horns in our heads.
Radical, yes.
Yeah, radicals. And it does get tiring when you meet some of these people, and you often need to say to them, not so much legislators, but I've found this having been out of the country recently, come back, that you go out and report on the streets and talk to people in the streets, and they've got a confrontational attitude mm-hmm. towards you because yep. you're a journalist.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, what are we, in Russia? It's ludicrous at times, you know?
I was going to ask you about the overseas stuff later, but let's just do it now. I want to hear about some of your overseas reporting experience. I was thinking that a way to get into this might be the demonstrations that we've seen during the national anthem recently. Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, started this a month and a half ago now and has been joined by dozens of other NFL players. We've seen a WNBA team take a knee, I think it was last week. Megan Rapinoe, I believe that's how you pronounce her last name, the former U.S. women's soccer player. Did I pronounce that right?
Rapinoe,
thank you. Rapinoe. And I'm Italian. God, somewhere. Great-grandmother Maria Tiberi is not happy with me. That kind of demonstration, you ever see anything like that overseas? How was it received if you did, and how would it have been received if you're thinking, Lord, no one was going to take a knee during a national anthem?
It's a great question. I've got a friend in who's working in North Korea, and I asked him how things were, and he said, I can't complain. I'm kidding. That's a joke.
You literally can't complain. Right.
But I think that the joy is that in the United States you can demonstrate.
Right.
Right. I think that the problem is that sometimes we forget how much demonstrations are manipulated.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Well,
that you've seen and where are you?
Yeah. I mean, I spent a lot of time in the Middle East. I recently spent a lot of time in Turkey, where, you know, the idea that if you've got a large demonstration, if you understand how demonstrations work, it's possible that people try and infiltrate a demonstration to swing it one direction or the other, maybe make it more violent than it is, that concept of thugs penetrating a demonstration
mm-hmm.
to make the demonstration not look peaceful. I think that we've had a few discussions inside the General Assembly about Moral Mondays, and they are peaceful. God forbid they become violent.
Right.
Because that would be the type of thing that if you want to see the state's AAA bond rating drop pretty fast, have some tear gas flying around at the General Assembly.
Right.
So they, you know, in that sense, that's kind of the extreme of what I'm talking about here.
Sure.
But I think that here in the United States, people taking a stand during the national anthem, isn't that in theory, I love my country, but I'm highly distrustful of my government?
Sure. Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
I think it falls
squarely under the First Amendment. And
right.
For people.
I think that the NFL has done a tremendous job of trying to make it seem like it's the American flag.
Right.
It's a football game.
It's a football game. And I think I'm not taking a knee and I'm not aligned with any of these folks, but I think Colin Kaepernick has very clearly stated this isn't about protesting the flag itself. This is about protesting law enforcement methods, police brutality. And he has said that he has a tremendous amount of respect for law enforcement and the military service, which I think you have to do at this point if you're going to pursue one of these demonstrations, ongoing demonstrations, and hope for any kind of support, right?
Absolutely. I've worked with the Defense Department for several years in my life, so I've got a lot of respect for that community and having been a part of that community. At the same time, I think you'd find a lot of men in that community would say, well, good on him,
yeah.
Because he's not disrespecting us. He's making a point about, you know, the national anthem. One time in Baghdad years ago, we played it Jimi Hendrix's version of the national anthem.
Uh-huh.
Occasionally, we would play that late at night. This is back in 2006 at the height of the war.
And where would you be? In a hotel? On a military base?
I know. At that point, I was working in the U.S. Embassy.
Okay.
And sometimes the nights got very long and tiring there for various reasons because it was the height of the war in 2005, 2006. You could talk to military personnel about Jimi Hendrix, and you might sometimes explain to them that he actually was in the 82nd Airborne, and he served. And people would then realize, wow, well, that's certainly a fantastic take on the national anthem. You know, Colin Kaepernick's a football player, and he's protesting. I think the big beef, and as you know, is like he makes a lot of money, so there's a lot of envy involved that who is he to potentially say bad things about the United States when he pulls in $16 million a year being a football player.
Well, I will point out that one thing for me, and I'm a sports follower, less of a fanatic than I used to be. I remember growing up and hearing criticisms lobbied toward Michael Jordan and lobbying criticisms that went toward Tiger Woods for not being more politically outspoken, not being more of an ambassador for African-American rights or Asian-American rights or minorities. And it is interesting, right, that now that I realize this is a contentious issue.
Right.
You've got somebody who is being a little more politically outspoken, and the support is there is support for Kaepernick, but it certainly seems like it's coming from one particular corner. It doesn't strike me as he has a lot of mainstream or middle ground support, but that's a tough one to sort out.
It's tough. I mean, he's got that afro that he's grown out,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he's taken too many dings to the head. No, I mean, I think that the other thing is he's a second string quarterback,
right?
And it's
like
not as if Usain Bolt has suddenly said, you know, I don't want to fly to America because I'm afraid of being shot.
Right.
It's a guy who's a second-string quarterback with a lot of, I think he's, you know, he's probably also, people don't like to discuss this, but he's probably had some identity issues, wasn't he? He was adopted by white parents, right?
Sure.
He's wrestling with these things on his own personal level. The issue is that his stage is an international stage.
Right.
So he's working out a kink in his personality on an international stage.
I think it will be very interesting, just quickly on this before we move on to something else, what happens as basketball season begins in several weeks. Because football is much more of a team-oriented game. In basketball, you've got these superstars that aren't wearing much, right? And I think the faces are more commonly known in American households, and you've got a lot of guys. It'll be interesting to see what they do. The NBA actually has a rule against this. So if LeBron or Steph Curry or players that are not as well known are not standing up, they will be fine, my understanding of it, just for doing that. But it'll be interesting to see how this continues or elevates or de-escalates as we move into the fall and the winter. All right, so as we talk about demonstrations and we talk about football, obviously I think Charlotte comes to mind for most people. There are a lot of different layers to this story. We're hearing calls for greater transparency, for more of the dash cam footage to come out. Of course, we're talking about the shooting death last Tuesday of Keith Lamont Scott. The NAACP and clergy are going to be leading a rally tonight. This is Monday. they have made calls for a federal investigation to take place. How have you covered this story over the past 6-7 days? How are you planning on covering it moving forward? From, again, a place you said that's pretty specific, not too high off the ground.
At the Insider, we don't as much focus on, you know, national issues like that. Although, obviously, there are a lot of the politicians in North Carolina right now are using it as, you know, as a way to score political points, either through, you know, Mayor Roberts and Charlotte didn't do enough and, you know, made mistakes early on in terms of the police response, et cetera, or, you know, Governor McCrory brought in the National Guard and is getting praise for that. And both sides are doing it. Both sides are pointing out the other side when they are trying to score political points, but yet in the next breath doing it themselves. So it's a highly polarizing and political issue right now at a time when we have some huge elections coming up. In this state.
Well, yeah, go ahead, Dan.
I was going to say, the luxury of being at the Insider is that you do go in and you cover House floor debates,
right.
Senate floor debates. And this issue, I mean, at the heart of Charlotte is body cam footage.
Right.
Essentially, which was a major issue during this short legislative session.
Right.
The legislation was introduced at the beginning of the session, and then there was a 3 or 4 days of intense debate mm-hmm. on body cams towards the end.
Right.
And really it came down to a surveillance state versus transparency mm-hmm. state, right?
And that takes effect on Saturday, the new law that that was passed during the short session, if memory serves, right?
Right? I believe that's
1st.
Right,
yeah.
October 1st.
That's correct. Yeah.
It doesn't really have much to do with this case, but it does raise the issue that, you know, the General Assembly deals with things that a couple of them pop up each session that are just so critical to how we perceive reality.
Right, and definitely tied to some national issues, even if not, you know, intended to.
Right.
Do we have a sense, either of you have a sense of how this political maneuvering is going to play out or is playing out? So, yeah, the National Guard was brought in. Mayor Roberts was criticized for not moving quickly enough. In my mind, with these tight presidential, gubernatorial, Senate races, everybody I seem to talk to, you know, it goes back to a large extent to these suburban moms. It goes back to these swing voters in Wake County and Mecklenburg County. So, I mean, it doesn't necessarily matter how a lot of people are viewing how this is playing out in Charlotte. At least that's kind of what I'm trying to get at here. Do we have a sense of how it's playing out for those swing voters? If I am spitting out a question that makes sense.
Yeah, I think the question makes sense. I think that, again, from our perspective, when you work inside the General Assembly, you're oftentimes privy to conversations in there about large issues mm-hmm. and how they're affecting those swing voters out in the suburbs and how they are going to then ultimately decide.
Right.
In this case, a lot of these, you know, I think when you're in, to back up a moment, when you're inside the building, sometimes people talk about the big dots and they allow the population to connect them.
Yeah.
And in this case, the dots are really wild when you slow it down a little bit and you realize that Pat McCrory served how many terms as mayor of Charlotte?
Seven.
Seven terms as mayor of Charlotte.
Yeah.
Right? And that this major new issue about dash cams, this major new piece of legislation just passed as well. These are two big dots. Also what happened in Charlotte, it was HB2. So is it coincidence that all these issues are swirling around?
Or is it politics?
Or is it politics, right?
In a presidential election year.
Yeah, and I think that, was it Tim Moore? We were in with Tim Moore last month for about 30 minutes.
Okay.
We sat with him, and we had a good discussion. Pat brought up the question, you know, what were some of his regrets? Did he have any regrets about HB2? And Speaker Tim Moore is a thoughtful, interesting character. He's, you know, you've dealt with him.
Mm-hmm.
I've dealt with him and as long as I've worked at the Insider, and you realize that the man does have one of the most complicated political jobs in the state. He keeps track of 120 egos, 119 including his own.
While also trying to maintain a functional bridge to the executive mansion.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Right. So, you know, what was his regret about HB2? And he said that he believed that they'd lost track of the messaging.
Hmm.
What was the messaging? For him, it was safety.
Yeah.
You know, and I believe that he believes that. you know, like I say, you're privy to some of these conversations, but at times, you know, it gets difficult in terms of when the news that you can report and then what you hear about these big dots that are coming to play. You know, was the National Guard called in very quickly to make Charlotte look more out of control than it was?
Right.
You know?
Or was it necessary?
You know? And then I today I was watching some of the, I had CNN on at home as I was heading out of the house. You have a couple of different versions of cell phone footage versus some of the body cam footage that occurred there. You know, who's the first line of enforcement in our democracy? It's law enforcement. It's not an easy job.
Right.
You know? Who's the first line of repression in the society? Black folks. And being one in a lot of the country is not an easy job either. Right?
No, certainly not. And I think that gets lost in this, right? I mean, I think it gets so dialed up and there's so much animosity and anger and people go running to their corners, whether that's because of social media, whether that's because the conversation is exhausted. But having a conversation with, at least from my vantage point, having a conversation where there are real presented solutions or considered ideas on the table, it seems to be happening less and less frequently. And that doesn't seem like a good thing in terms of curtailing some of these incidents from happening again and again. And that's a pretty broad statement, but I think that's one of the big challenges is people aren't having real conversations about this.
I mean, Pat and I sometimes, I'm horrified to tell him that, you know, 2 years ago I sold a house and I left the money in a savings account and I got less than 1% at a bank and that I'm subject to this nonsense news of just garbage constantly that's just like distractionary social, you know, culture issue, culture war fog, right? And it's tough when you're covering politics and there is so much culture war fog that's blown in your face from operatives from both parties, right?
I agree with you.
That then makes it hard to actually say, well, what's the actual issue here? You know, is this issue that people are trying to, you know, it's a great distraction from something that's more that should be discussed much more. 280 people moved to North Carolina a day, and you know, are we going to be California and be an interesting place that's progressive and interesting and has a government that has solutions, or are we going to be, you know, blowing around a lot of social and culture war fog all the time?
With a nod to the Washington Post piece that ran at some point in the last week, an op-ed piece, "Stop calling us the media." This was a plea from someone in the media saying. There, I just did it. Right. Don't call us the media. So acknowledging that piece has just come out, I'm going to ask you this question. Are there things that we in the media, reporters and journalists in North Carolina who cover state politics day to day, should be doing or can be doing where there's less of this fog and more of this substantive, whether it's economic or health, whatever it may be? What is it we are missing?
That's a good question. I mean, I think a lot of the bandwidth of the media, if you're going to call it that, in Raleigh and across the state these days has been taken up by the big issues such as House Bill 2, now the
Charlotte
protests
situation,
protests in Charlotte, the coal ash debate, things like that. And not that they're not substantive issues, but there are so many other things going on that we hear about, but that we don't have time in this fog to devote enough time to and try to make sense of. I mean, there's a lot of good investigative stories waiting to be told out there about a lot of different things.
But are we talking education? Are we talking wages? Are we talking rural economic growth? Or
all of the above.
All of the above.
And we could name 10 more, you know. Really easily.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's the nature of when you're in a modern democracy. I think it's hard because ours went through this. We went through this period from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s where you had basically three TV channels, and we had this feeling that it was a unified culture. Was it really, or were there just three TV channels? And we're now way out of that, and we all know that. And journalists sit around, and this news environment that we all talk about, you know, people are just watching Twitter, and I think journalists are being manipulated more by each other.
Sure.
And operatives can slip into that space very easily because rumor is public. It's no longer private. So rumor is now public, and that makes the political space, which is always full of actors who are trying to wrestle with each other and dominate it, it's then much harder, and it's very unsexy to talk about some of the things that that we report at the Insider. Pat will often do actual revenue numbers.
Yeah.
You know? And it's great to do those quick in the afternoon with Kai Rizdahl and all the hot music in the background. But the reality is, who even understands that show? And I sometimes listen to Kai Rizdahl. I don't want to crack on the guy. But you listen to that show when you're driving, you're like, man, I'm getting nailed on prescription drug costs for my kids. And everybody's giggling about, you know, this next drug company that's out ramming it into people's throats, you know? And, like, where's the actual, where does that then hit in a state legislature where they're supposed to slow these things down or not? And if I could make one last point for soapbox, I was horrified last week about what appeared to be the lack of reporting on what supposedly happened with gas costs in Raleigh, because there was supposedly a gas leak in Alabama, you know? And it's nuts to me that there's all this coverage of, like, transgender bathroom issues, which do affect, like, what percent of the population? Less than one?
Sure.
You know?
Directly, right? But then,
whereas gas costs affect who?
Certainly a majority of people, I would contend, in this state with not so great public transit, an overwhelming majority.
And there just wasn't much, like, scratching of the, or is anybody's head going to roll over the fact that what happened there? What was that? You know? But I think sometimes when you're in the South, the elite still holds this position. They're pretty high above the, they're not on the top of the pyramid. They're somewhere up in the clouds.
Right, right.
You know, and that they're sometimes this social fog that we deal with as journalists when you're trying to sort through the numbers.
When you and you talk about 1950s to today, I think there's certainly more of a diverse landscape of media. No doubt. I mean, that's right. Obvious. But I think there's also a much more diverse population, certainly in urban areas of this state. I mean, in the state itself. I mean, the state has way more Hispanic Latinos than it did just 15 years ago, let alone 60. I mean, there were parts of the state that had virtually no Hispanic or Latinos 60 years ago. Yeah. So I think that's one factor. And to me, one of the disconnects is that, and this is not unique to North Carolina. This is unique to, I think, most states, if not all, and most municipalities in the country, is the folks who represent the constituents, that they don't mirror them. I mean, I think we have 3 non-white U.S. senators at this point, or like 4 or 5 minority governors. This isn't, I mean, change takes a long time. And like, I think that the changes in the legislature, legislative changes across the country, are taking place much slower than demographic changes, obviously. Does that mean you were going to say something probably more intelligent?
I think part of it is gerrymandering. Right. I think, you know, people are elected to districts by overwhelming margins and know they don't have anything to fear. You know, I'm talking about state legislators now. They don't have much to fear 2 years later because the demographics aren't going to shift in a lot of these districts enough to make a difference in the election. And that's why I think you said these suburb areas are the main battlegrounds in North Carolina now, both for the presidential race and all the down ballot races, because of the influx of new people, a lot of whom are Democrats and unaffiliated, and Republicans have held those seats in the suburbs for the most part. But now they've seen the shift so rapidly that they're being challenged very competitively this time around.
And as we go ahead.
Okay. I mean, I think gerrymandering is part of the polarization we were talking about before, where, you know, you get a legislator into a seat elected by, you know, the 70% of Republicans who live in that district, and then they don't feel like they need to come to the middle at all on anything.
Right.
And so compromise is much harder to come by when you have somebody who just wants to stake out the, you know, ground on one side or the other. And it goes the same for the Democrats, who are elected in highly Democratic districts.
Right.
It's the same thing. They have no reason to want to come in the middle because they're safe, and they're going to upset the people who elected them if they move to the right.
And a quick point. Pat and I were talking about this on the ride over from Raleigh, that there is a problem, I think, in this, what is the so-called mainstream media, that there are times when we've lost the language to Orwell predicted where we were going. We've lost the language, in a sense, to actually strip back these things and discuss the actual motivations and some of the tactics that are used in modern politics. And I think Pat's talking about gerrymandering. When you're looking at the South from outside, you realize racism is politics.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
It's been politics for 200 plus years.
For 200
right?
plus years. Right. Right. And so why is it, you know, it's just another tool in the toolbox. So sometimes I think in the more liberal-minded folks, they're really offended by that. But it's just, it's all, you know.
It's part of the game. You can't undo history. You can't take the roots, all of the roots out of the ground with it's, one fell
right.
swoop.
And political tactics. I think Mao Zedong, right, the great leader of China last century, who certainly shook China up enough that it woke, once had the great quote that all politics comes from the barrel of a gun. It's not patty cake. It's, I think Tip O'Neill from Massachusetts said it's not beanbag, you know? So it's hard because what's happening in Charlotte is tragic. What's happening in Charlotte is also a ruling party trying to maintain control.
You mentioned Tip O'Neill in Massachusetts. I wanted to touch on the golden dome of the hub before we departed today, at least a little bit. You covered state politics there. Bill Weld was the governor at the time. He's now the vice presidential candidate on the Libertarian ticket, running with Gary Johnson. That's just the in I'm using. What are some of the most striking differences? What is the most striking difference between, and recognizing that you did this 15, 20 years ago, cover state politics in Massachusetts, in Boston, what are some of the most obvious differences or things that you notice day-to-day between Boston and Raleigh?
I'll tell a quick story here. I think that there's a statue of George Washington that sits out in front of the old Capitol here.
Here in Raleigh, yep.
Here in Raleigh. And I think that the statue is less than 6 feet tall. And the first time I saw the statue, I thought, my God, that is a very small statue of George Washington. I then quickly somewhere read that there was ordinance on the books that the statue could not be desecrated by bags of dung and rotten fruit and various other things, because the statue, I believe, was erected sometime in the 1840s. So as you're talking about the lead up to a civil war, people would go down and they really didn't like the federal government 160 years ago. And they went after this statue of Washington. I think that if you go up to Massachusetts, that's you don't find that animosity for the federal government or government in general, that there's a tremendous animosity towards the concept of government that you feel down here. That you don't feel as much in Massachusetts. People may not like politicians, but the idea that government is threatening is not inherent.
I want to ask Pat a couple more questions, but before I do that, any hint or preview snapshot of a story or two that you're working on or hope to do, not just a shorter daily thing, but maybe something you're sinking your teeth into a little bit more, not to give away all the beans, but is there something you're trying to work on between now and Election Day that could be of interest to us?
Yeah, certainly. And if I could tell one really quick Bill Weld story.
Oh, please do.
This was a very funny, quick Bill Weld story where I covered Bill Weld.
The Boylan Show.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I covered Bill Weld in 96 going against John Kerry. They were running against each other for Senate.
The U.S. Senate, yeah.
U.S. Senate. And Weld at the time was the standing governor in Massachusetts. Kerry was, I think, a second-term incumbent. And it was a hard-fought battle, tremendous. They did about 8 debates, I believe. Really a rough, fantastic election. I believe it was 51-49.
Okay.
That Kerry defeated Weld. In the lead up to Election Day, they'd pledged to each other to share a beer after the final result.
Uh-huh.
So 2 days after the election, they meet at an Irish pub in the shadow of the old Boston Garden.
Nice.
On a back brick alleyway street. Fantastic Irish pub. Weld gets there first, and he may have had one or two quick pints before Kerry even showed up. And Bill Weld is a really delightful character. I hope the Libertarian...
With or without a couple of pints.
Yeah, I hope the Libertarian Party goes somewhere, because he's the type of character the United States needs right now. Anyway, Kerry comes in, and he has a small sink that's like from a Winnebago or an RV. And he brings this in. And they stand there, and they toast each other about how, you know, they threw everything at each other, except, and then Kerry leans forward with the kitchen sink, and the prop is, I threw everything at you except the kitchen sink. And Bill Weld hadn't seen the sink. He just saw it, and he looked at it, and he said, what's that, to throw up in? And I realized that, you know, politicians, they really feel it when they lose a race. And
sure.
It was very funny and very fast and very unscripted.
Pretty
and
good.
And the joy is when how spontaneous some of these men are. Anyway, your question about reporting, I'm doing 2 profiles on the Treasury race.
Interesting.
Yeah, so Dale Falwell and Dan Blue III, both fascinating men in their own right, both a lot of strengths, some weaknesses, And I look to have that out fairly soon.
And we've got what, the 26th biggest pension in the world,
in
or
the
something
world.
Like that?
Yeah, yeah, about 12th, 10 to 12th, depending on kind of how the market ends at the end of the day in the country, and then 26th in the world. So it's massive at $90 billion.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Moving from Dan to Pat, we're chatting with Dan Boylan and Pat Gannon here from The Insider. Here on the WNC Politics podcast, we're going to hit a couple more topics. Pat, unfortunately, is leaving the Capitol Press Corps. He's going to work for the State Board of Elections beginning next week. You've been covering, you said, since 99? Is that, you've been covering government since 99 or North Carolina General Assembly since 99?
I've been covering government since 99. I moved to Wilmington in 2002.
Okay.
And started with, you know, what most young reporters start with, City Hall, you know, I covered City Hall for a number of years in Wilmington before ultimately moving up here with the Wilmington Star News as the Raleigh Bureau chief slash reporter.
Sure, sure.
And then got hired from The Insider in 2012.
All right, we're going to go relative rapid fire here. Yep. If there are questions that you can't answer or choose not to, that's acceptable. Most memorable election here in North Carolina that you've covered, whether that's municipal, state, or federal?
Probably this one so far.
Yeah.
Just the closeness of the governor's race, the closeness of several of the Council of State races, the closeness of the presidential race, of course, as one of the top battleground states, and the U.S. Senate race. Did cover some interesting congressional races, mostly Republican primaries down in the 7th District, North Carolina. A gentleman named Ilario Pantano ran against former Democratic U.S. Rep. Mike McIntyre a couple times, and then he challenged David Rauser, who is now a representative, in a primary, and he was always an interesting candidate to cover.
Those were heated, right?
They
memory
were.
Serves.
They were. They yeah. were very much so.
Those were heated. All right. One story that you did not get to in entirety, in full, in part, that you wish you had, that you're willing to share, that Dan's not going to be ticked off about if you mention it here to our tens of thousands, not really.
This is kind of jokingly, but when I was working in upstate New York, I'm a huge baseball fan, okay. always have been, huge Cleveland Indians fan. They're going to clinch the Central Division tonight, hopefully. But got to go cover the induction ceremonies in Cooperstown.
Nice.
And actually got me and a buddy of mine, a colleague of mine at the time, went and covered one of these things and ended up in Pete Rose's paraphernalia, you know, baseball, you know, memorabilia shop.
Sure.
And ended up sitting down with him, talking to him for about an hour. It wasn't very busy in his shop, but he let us sit there for about an hour and talk to him. And when we left, and we had asked him any question we could think of, and we never asked him, did you bet on baseball? I have regretted that from that day forward, you know, because that was a huge topic back then. Still gets plenty of media today.
Why didn't you ask him?
Bad decision. I just never really popped in my head. I think we were a little bit starstruck,
sure.
and awestruck, being huge baseball fans from Cleveland. And it just, I don't know that it ever entered my mind.
Sure.
Should have, for sure.
Did the late Stan Musial? Thank you. Did he play his harmonica when you did your, do you remember?
Don't remember.
Okay. I covered an induction ceremony in 2005, and he played Take Me Out to the Ball Game on his harmonica. It was a pretty cool moment. Legislator at the General Assembly who you will miss interacting with the most?
I'm going to couch this by saying I'll give you a Republican and a Democrat,
okay.
and couch it in terms of saying who was easy to deal with as a reporter, who always got back to you, who was friendly, who was forthcoming with information and didn't always play the political line. I'll go, and I could name a dozen easily, probably several dozen.
Sure.
Because a lot of them are pretty easy to deal
with.
For
sure, I would second that.
I'm going to say Bill Rabin, Senator Bill Rabin from Brunswick County, was always very helpful, was always talkative, and would sit down with me in his office and you know, answer any question that I had. He's a Republican. Democratic side, I think Greer Martin is very media-friendly, representative from Wake County. Yeah, I could name plenty of other ones, but I'll stop there.
All right. Well, and
it's always good when politicians are responsive. We get so many non-answers and so many non-callbacks that it's yes. refreshing when people will respond A and B will respond with a real answer and not, you know, some political mumbo jumbo that means nothing.
Yep, makes our jobs a lot more fun. It does. And on a real hard hitting question here, when you come back to visit the legislature, and Dan takes you to the cafeteria to eat because he's an upstanding gentleman, or the snack bar, what's your go to?
I like the sandwiches that they make in there. The lady in the snack bar slaps the meat on really, really, really heavy, and yeah. she gives you a big pile of pickles on the side. And the roast beef sometimes is dry, but the turkey's always good. The ham's always good. Throw some Swiss cheese on there on some either homemade rolls that they have or some rye bread, and it's golden.
35, 38 minutes, whatever we're in. The most animated you've been all day. Sandwiches. He's a
yeah.
sandwich
yeah,
guy.
That's, yeah, Pat was the one who first took me down to the cafeteria in the basement.
What's your go-to?
Well, when you're in the basement of the General Assembly, you know, you think that there are like magic rooms with men printing money and trolls and ghosts and a dungeon and all this stuff. You realize it's really just a building full of humans trying to, you know, control other humans and make sure that we don't have another civil war. So in that mind, I went in there and Pat said the salad's pretty good, and I had one.
Great stuff.
It's pretty good. It's not. It could be a lot better.
It could be a lot better. I'm the salad guy. All right, guys. I appreciate it very much. From the insider, Dan Boylan and Pat Gannon. Pat, best of luck moving forward.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having us, Jeff.
Real pleasure, Jeff. Thank you.
All right. That's it for the WUNC Politics Podcast. If you like what you heard, feel free to share it on Twitter or Facebook. Ask us a question or share a comment there as well. And remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. And of course, at our website, wunc.org. Thanks to engineer David Tripp. I'm Jeff Tiberi. We'll talk to you again soon.